You know what I dislike? Name droppers. Nobody wants to hear about a guy talk about who they know, how they met, what they did when they got together, or when they expect to talk again. It's a shallow and annoying personality flaw rooted in low self-esteem and insecurity. Attaching some level of self-importance by flaunting your brief associations, and frankly, I intensely dislike people who fall into that obnoxious pattern. Having said that, let me drop a couple names on you. In 2007, I interviewed Todd Rundgren, and in that interview, I asked him a bunch of questions about producing the New York Dolls and Janis Joplin and Meatloaf and a bunch of other stuff. But what I really wanted to ask him was about producing XTC, my favorite band of all time, and their 1986 album, Skylarking. Now, I knew that it wasn't a great experience for anybody. Todd Rundgren didn't like Andy Partridge. Andy Partridge didn't care for Todd Rundgren. And for the last 30 years, the two of them have been taking swipes at each other despite the fact that Skylarking is one of the most incredible albums of the 1980s. So let me continue to drop another name for you. Several months ago, I interviewed Andy Partridge from XTC, and I asked him about Todd Rundgren, and he was more than willing to share his thoughts, and they weren't exactly complimentary. In other words, he doesn't really like the guy either. So who do I believe? Well, not that my opinion amounts to much, but when an artist leaves his art in the hands of a secondary party, often against their will, as was the case here, and the artist is unhappy with the end result, then I'm more inclined to side with the artist. However, when I find that the final result of that intervention is still one of my favorite works of music, regardless of the acrimony surrounding it, then it basically comes down to just one thing. I'm a much bigger fan of Andy Partridge than I am of Todd Rundgren. Therefore, in my opinion, Andy wins. In fact, it's not even close. My belief in Andy Partridge is completely lopsided, and that's why I'm choosing to take a closer look at XTC's Skylarking. This is Baxi's enormous record collection on Baxi's Musical Podcast.
What is it? It's Baxi's Musical Podcast.
Resistance is useless.
So what's the problem here? On one hand, you got one of the most prolific and brilliant songwriters of his generation. And on the other hand, you got the guy that produced Meatloaf, The Tubes, The New York Dolls, Cheap Trick, The Psychedelic Furs, Patti Smith, Grand Funk, Janis Joplin, The Isley Brothers, Hall & Oates, Celine Dion, Jimmy Buffett, Badfinger, Johnny Winter, and about 500 to 600 others. I could go on, and I will. But in order to understand what happened, you almost need to go back a couple years and look at where XTC had been. XTC was a band that was formed in Swindon, England in the mid-1970s, along with Andy Partridge, Colin Moulding, Terry Chambers, and Barry Andrews, who would leave the band following their second album to be replaced by Dave Gregory. When their third album, Drums and Wires, came out in 1979, they scored their first commercial hit with the single Making Plans for Nigel, a song which was written by Colin Moulding, even though Andy Partridge was the primary songwriter in the band. Now, if you heard the interview I did with Andy back in June, you heard him discuss the fact that from the age of 12, he had been taking a largely unregulated dosage of Valium. It was an addiction that he would wrestle with for the next dozen years. And as the band progressed forward, they released their next album, Black Sea, filled with songs that were designed to play live, like Respectable Street, Generals and Majors, Towers of London, and several others. Suddenly, XTC were on a roll, touring the world with bands like The Talking Heads and The Police, all of it while Andy continued to take these large dosages of Valium. Their next album, English Settlement, was a major departure for the band. Not only were the songs more sophisticated and in some ways more pastoral and serene, but there were enough songs like their hit Senses Working Overtime to turn it into a double album where all four sides were equally great, but not nearly as easy to reproduce on stage. And that's when things started to turn south. Because while the band was getting ready to resume their relentless touring schedule, Andy's wife at the time decided to flush his stock of Valium down the toilet, forcing Andy to end his addiction cold turkey, forcing him to literally detox a 12-year addiction while on the cusp of beginning a brutal touring schedule. Finally, during a show in Paris, Andy lasted less than half a song, laid down his guitar, and walked off the stage for the very last time. Andy's sudden breakdown led to the decision to permanently retire from performing live. And apart from a small handful of radio appearances on the BBC and a pre-recorded performance on The Late Show with David Letterman, Andy Partridge has not played live since. Now, the problem with that is, one, record companies don't like releasing albums if bands won't play them live. Two, less performing means less money. And three, it's not a guarantee that everybody in the band is on board with the plan. In XTC's case, drummer Terry Chambers left the band. Virgin Records wanted them to make hit records. And once Andy was healthy enough to come back, they went into the studio to make an experimental album, Mummer, instead. While it was a good XTC record, Virgin was hoping for something a little different. Their next album, Big Express, didn't exactly fare much better. And since they weren't going on the road to promote it, sales were less than impressive. So now you've got a problem. Having released two fairly experimental albums, both of which were expensive to produce, Virgin Records offered the band an ultimatum. Either sell 70,000 units of your next album or face the sudden termination of their contract. And to ensure that this wouldn't happen, they gave the band a short list of producers who they felt would give XTC the best chance of turning things around financially. Never mind the fact that Andy had already been producing records for other artists by this time, Virgin Records wanted a seasoned professional. And since Todd Rundgren was the only name that anyone recognized, that's who they chose. Now things start to get complicated and messy. Because there was a limited budget, XTC had prepared more than 20 demo tapes ahead of time and sent them off to Todd Rundgren. After listening to these demos, Rundgren selected the songs he liked best and then suggested the songs could work together as a concept album, running together as a theme of life, death, religion, marriage, family, extramarital affairs, all wrapped together through the viewpoint of a season cycle beginning on a summer's day. Great idea. That was in January of 1986, and by then, everybody was in agreement. But by April, the band arrived at Rundgren's home studios in Woodstock, New York. And when they arrived, not only had Rundgren chosen the songs he wanted to record, he had already decided upon what order they would appear on the album, without any input from anybody in the band. The songs were recorded in a pre-calculated order set by Rundgren. And because many of the songs were recorded quickly without multiple takes, the band, particularly Andy and Colin, felt that the recording felt rushed and unrehearsed. And by doing so, Andy felt that Rundgren was doing this to save a buck so he can move on to his next project. You see, when you have two strong-willed personalities vying for artistic control at the very beginning stages of the recording process, what you have is a recipe for war. And that's what happened here. The battle lines were drawn. Arguments ensued. Rundgren wanted things done his way. Andy Partridge wanted his songs done his way. And very rarely were either one of them traveling in the same direction. However, what was clear is that this was arguably one of the best group of songs that XTC had ever put together. Clearly more focused and more melodic than anything they had done in the last 4 years. And yet the arguments between artist and producer continued to sour the mood of the skylarking sessions until they were completed in June. But the problems didn't stop there. On one hand, Andy accused Rundgren of being a control freak, being prone to belittling artists and rushing through the record. Rundgren accused Andy of being spoiled and inflexible, and those accusations have continued to divide the two ever since. And the biggest problem since its release was the issue of polarity. It's believed that a wiring issue in Rundgren's studio caused the album's initial mastering to sound thin. It's also alleged that Rundgren's engineering skills were unable to correct the problem, and because Rundgren was already ready to move on to his next project, it was released uncorrected. It's an accusation that Todd Rundgren vehemently denies. In fact, he doesn't believe there was a polarity issue at all, and that the accusation is bogus. Andy Partridge, on the other hand, believes that the polarity issues were notable and needed to be corrected, which they have been on at least two different reissues. And one of the other confrontations was over the release of the song Dear God. Dear God was a song written by Andy Partridge which strongly questions the existence of God in a world filled with tragedy and injustice. It's a really powerfully worded song, but it's also one of the strongest songs recorded for the album. According to Rundgren, Andy didn't want to release the song because he was too afraid of how it would be perceived in the public, accusing Andy, in his own words, of being a pussy. Andy suggested that it was Virgin Records who pulled the song from the master list because of their fear of commercial backlash, especially in the U.S., where Virgin Records believed the band needed to strike a hit. The initial pressings for Skylarking were released without Dear God. Instead, it had been replaced with a song called Mermaid Smile, which was a good song, but Dear God was better. Dear God was released as the B-side of the album's first single, which was the song Grass, written by Colin Moulding. The song didn't do very much in the UK. However, it became a hit on college radio stations across the US. So much so that Geffen, the US distributor of the album, recalled the initial pressings of the album and quickly re-released the album to include Dear God and dropped what they had replaced it with, Mermaid Smile. The album peaked in the U.S. at number 70, and as Andy and the record company expected, the song Dear God did face backlash in the U.S., including a bomb threat and boycotts. However, the song continued to grow in popularity in spite of the hesitation to release it at all. The good news is that Virgin's ultimatum of 70,000 units sold was met, and their contractual obligation continued for the next several years. Now, when I hear the record, I hear the most sophisticated and cohesive album of their career. Do I hear the polarity issues? It's hard for me to say because I'm not sure I would even be able to tell the difference or that it would change my opinion one way or another. Because of the 14 studio albums released by XTC during their career, Skylarking is still one of my favorites. From the opening track of Summer's Cauldron to the seamless transition into Colin Moulding's Grass to Dave Gregory's string arrangements on 1,000 Umbrellas to the rage and disillusionment of Dear God, Skylarking is one of the greatest albums of the 80s and, in my opinion, completely timeless. And then there's my favorite XTC song of all time, which opens up the second side of the album, Earn Enough for Us. It's not only the album's biggest rock song, it deals with the insecurities of starting a family. And to me, it's one of the highlights of the band's entire career. Again, this was an album that was difficult to make at a time when the band desperately needed to turn their fortunes around. And in many ways, it did. Unfortunately, it's never been an easy road for XTC, which is amazing to their fans who find it to be one of the most crucial and accessible bodies of music that the world has barely seen. And that's why it's this week's selection from Baxi's enormous record collection. Next time on Baxi's enormous record collection, we'll talk about a record that took 18 years before it finally got released. That's next time on Baxi's Musical Podcast.